Hello, my friend. I hope you're having an outstanding day, officially at the end of May. And this is Heather. This is the Back to Me podcast. And holy moly, I have another amazing person to talk to today. And this one's going to be kind of interesting because I don't think I've ever talked to a sexual fantasy expert before in real life, Artemisia Devine. Hello, my friend. How are you?
I'm delighted to be with you, Heather. Oh my goodness. Early in the morning here in Australia.
Yeah, it's night here. It's morning there. So you haven't had a whole coffee yet. You've just had a couple sips.
Mm-hmm. We'll see how this goes.
Time to warm up. So, somatic sexologist, sexual fantasy expert. These aren't job titles that I had ever heard of before I met you. And I don't even know how anyone would come to be in that kind of job. And there's just a lot of unknowns in this world. So maybe you can start by telling me, how does one become in this job? I don't know what to call it. Role? Profession. Profession. That's what I'm going to call it. Profession.
Mm-hmm. How do you indeed?
How do you?
I think it comes down to that whole thing is you teach what you need to learn, right? So it started off because I was afraid of sex, honestly. That's what it was. And especially afraid of my sexual fantasies. And I was, you know, I grew gigantic boobs of doom by the time I was 12 years old.
No.
So I did.
What's so funny is when I was a kid, when I was young, I wished I had that. But then when I saw the girls that happened to, I'm like, oh, thank God.
Yeah. So I got a lot of attention, whether I wanted it or not, from a very early age. And I experienced that attention as something that was, it was sexual desire as something that was being taken from me for somebody else's benefit in confusing ways. And I couldn't understand how, you know, I wasn't experiencing sexual desire for my own benefit.
Right.
So I was feeling attracted to people like we all are when we're young and wanting to have my own experiences, but feeling invisible when people were attracted to me because I was basically just a pair of bobbing watermelons walking around as far as they were concerned.
Oh my gosh. Young boys and their hormones, right?
Well, it wasn't just the young boys. It was everyone. So, oh, you man. Know, yeah. Including women. Women
Your
would
judge only.
Women would also judge me immediately because I had big breasts and feel a bit threatened by that because they saw the way that others were responding to me. And very often that you'd get labeled as the slut, even though you were just sitting there drawing a picture of a butterfly.
Like, right. And what? Were you blonde too?
Yeah.
Right. So right there,
uh-huh.
You have two strikes against you in the, you know, where we just stereotype people world.
Yeah. The sisterhood didn't trust me either. So
no.
Just because of my physicality, which made me realize that it's not just men who objectify you. And by objectify, I mean reduce you to your physical appearance.
Right. So. And then I guess as you get older and you, like, how did you find your own identity?
Well, I had a crisis point first. Got to the point where I was experiencing an awful lot of non-consensual attention that was not for my benefit, and it was actively disrespectful. Mm. And you know, I hit the crisis point of I think a lot of people hit, and a lot of people hit this point, and you can choose to suppress your own desire and your own sexuality at that point because it's just too dangerous, right. Or you choose to run towards it and go, I want to know how this works. I'm going to make this work for me. What's going on here? There's got to be more to it than this. I'm going to understand this. And that's the path I chose, obviously.
Obviously, yeah. We wouldn't be sitting around talking about it if you had run away from it and gone to live in the mountains, you know, hermit.
No.
And what did you learn?
Oh, I learned so much. I spent... It's over 30 years now of focusing on trying to understand sex. through so many different lenses and so many different jobs and ways of doing things. I worked in a sex shop for women at one stage. I remember taking my grandma to.
Oh my gosh!
It was called Bliss for Women. It was in Melbourne here. I think it's still online, that shop.
And one here called Good for Her.
Yeah. I let her in sometime after hours so she could have a look around at the toys by herself. And she spent about 20 minutes in there and she came out. She goes, "You're a bit behind the times, dear. I used to have one of those and I used it on your grandpa 20 years ago."
That's excellent.
I did all sorts of things. I had a lot of personal sex. I became what the I was expected to become as the busty blonde, like this person who was promiscuous and going out there and exploring. And I'd often go out on a Saturday night by myself because I didn't like going out with women friends, because women friends would make circles and keep all the attention to try and keep themselves safe from the desire. I'm now running towards this thing. I'm now going to poke the thing I'm scared of with a stick. I'm not going to,
you're not bringing a wingman to save you.
I'm going out there and dancing and listening to music and seducing a new person each Saturday night. But I thought I really knew. I went and learned from everyone I could learn from, some of the most amazing sex educators around the world, and practitioners of the erotic arts, everything from spiritual sex to, BDSM. I learned all about all of these different things. And I thought, I'm really advanced. I've got so many notches on my belt. I know what I'm doing. And then I decided to become a sex worker. And I entered the adult industry. And that's probably where I learned the most profound things.
Really?
Yeah. For 12 years, I worked full time as a sex worker and also as a professional dominatrix. And it was an eye opener. I thought I knew things, but I did not. I was still a beginner.
Right. You were in that teenage year where you're like, yeah, I know everything, Mom.
Yeah.
And then you find out you don't.
Yeah. But I also studied anthropology at university. So I'm looking at this, my experience in the sex industry, through my anthropological lens. That's just how I am. I cannot leave alone. I have to understand what's going on here. I'm never looking at the surface level. What is actually happening here? What is the social dynamics? What are the power dynamics? What are the different meanings everybody's putting on this situation? What's going on? And I tell you what, initially when I first started sex work, yeah, I did it because I was curious, but I also did it because I needed a lot of money really quickly for an operation. I wanted money.
Right.
And I wasn't setting out to become like a brilliant sex worker. I was just like, I want money. I've got blonde hair and boobs. Give me money. You've been asking.
The women have been earning money for ever since they invented money, because there's obviously a demand for it, right?
Right. There is.
I actually considered being a probably nobody knows this about me, that when I was in university, I was going to become a dancer, because I'm like, that's a good way to make money. But at the time in Toronto, all the clubs were run by Hells Angels, and I thought, no, I don't want to get into that scene. So
right. Yes. The container with which you can operate makes a world of difference. You need to be able to have a safe way of having your own autonomy to be able to make these offerings. Mm-hmm. And luckily for me, I live in Australia where sex work most of the states now are decriminalized completely. So that means it's just treated like any other business, which gives us power to protect ourselves. Where if it's not fully legal, you don't have that power to protect yourself.
Right.
So. I don't want to get into that side of things.
I was thinking about the anthropology side. So when you look at through the anthropology lens, there is a biological aspect to it all, but there's more than that, isn't there? I mean, I feel like there is.
Right. Well, lots of the dominant conversations around what sex is and why are we turned on by the things we're turned on by. That's what I'm really interested in, the mind, right? What's going on? Why do we behave this way? Why do we have these kinds of desires? And why do we have these kinds of sexual fantasies in particular? Like some of these fantasies, like I had sexual fantasies that were of things that I really did not want to be treated like in real life, but and yet they were super hot when I fantasized about them, and that was very confusing. So, very confusing. I think I'm not alone in this one.
You're not alone.
And lots of people would come to me too with sexual fantasies that they didn't know which parts to actually live out and which parts were better to left as fantasies. But what I noticed, and I stumbled across this accidentally, was that if I trusted people's turn-ons exactly the way they were, I didn't try and make them holy, I didn't try and fit them into some idea of how, you know, how things should be, in how I wanted to be treated in the outside world, right? And I actually trusted them. Then we created a really safe consensual container to explore it in. And we didn't necessarily live out exactly what was in their mind's eye, but I heard the essential parts of it.
Yeah.
When I trusted their turn-ons, really interesting things began to happen. Fascinating things. And they would often say by the end of a session or an experience with me, wow, I had no idea I could feel this way. And we'd end up sometimes, like you'd start off in the conversation, you know, they just wanted a busty blonde. They weren't thinking about anything more than that. And they were already in the altered state of consciousness of being turned on, because being horny is an altered state of consciousness, people. You think differently when you are aroused,
right? Yeah. That's why they say men always think with their groins, you know. It's like he's not thinking straight, he's thinking with his little head, not his big head.
It's right? Absolutely a state of consciousness you can recognize straight away. But what I noticed was, when we had this safe container to actually trust it, to live this out in a way that I wasn't trying to get my needs met, because I got paid.
Right.
So I was no longer trying to get their approval of me or trying to get my needs met. I was just focusing on theirs purely. And if I followed their particular map of turn-ons all the way to the end, they started having these incredible experiences where they opened. They started off with smutty talk and dirty talk, and that's where it should have gone because that's what the map said. But they'd end up with this heart expansion, with their mind opening, with discovering that they could, their guards were completely down and mine too. And I know this sounds really cheesy, but I can't describe it very easily in words other than trying to say, it felt like I could see their soul through their eyes and they could see mine. It felt like actual connection was happening. It's almost like when we went into some of the deeper places, it felt like we were being our higher selves and our primal selves at the same time, right here, right now. And that was extraordinary.
That's super cool, right?
So I'm like, okay, there's something in this that's worthwhile looking closer at. What's going on here? Why do we have these fantasies? They're taking us somewhere. What's going on?
And why are we so afraid of them?
Mm.
Besides hundreds of years of the church telling us that they're evil, but or your mother saying, no. Whatever, don't find anything under whatever they find under your bed, and trying to hide it. And I think the key there is that you didn't make any of it weird, right?
Trusted it.
Yeah.
Trusted that their particular desires and they weren't interacting with them with awareness or maturity. That part I had to take control of,
right?
And make sure they came into the safe container of consent. But because they're just not aware of it, because when it's still taboo, you don't form a relationship with it. It's just a big, powerful force that comes along and you've got to somehow navigate this tidal wave inside of you without any true understanding of what's happening. It's going to cause a mess. But yeah. When it's in a safe container, this part is really wise. It's incredibly wise. It's there for a reason.
So what do you think? So because you mentioned that, you know, people can have fantasies that they don't actually want necessarily to live in real life. But is that the same kind of fantasy, or is that a different kind than one that people would want to follow through to the end?
Excellent questions, Heather. You're
I'm good, super curious.
Good. I trust all fantasies. Mm. I trust all of them, because they're not instructions for how to live in the outside world. They're not even instructions of how to have sex in bed, but they are stories. They are the exact story that tells us it's the exact story that our egos in particular need to hear in order to let our guards down so we can open to the vulnerability of connection and pleasure, and sometimes even those expanded states of consciousness.
Right.
Right. So it's,
you know, right there. Story. We're going to say sex for enlightenment.
Who knew that? Well, that's the title of my upcoming book, is The Spirituality of Smut. So, you know.
That's awesome. It reminds me a little bit of like tantric. Mm-hmm. Like tantric sex is about, you know, that connection but they weave a lot of like other, I don't know what to call it, stuff, other yogic type stuff into it. So yes, I don't know. Do you know much about it, or?
I sure do, yes.
Of course you do. You're an expert. That's why I'm talking to you.
Yes, Tantra is one particular pathway in to this particular altered state of consciousness. Right across cultures, we've known that sex can lead to these expanded states of consciousness where you can lose your sense of self, your ego, your small self,
right,
and experience the biggest expanded self that's beyond that. And even if you have oneness experiences with all of life, like that kind of amazing feeling of awe and wonder you feel standing on the beach at night looking at the infinity of stars, right, and you're astonished you existed, all that bigger sense of self where your heart expands with the joy and the mystery of being alive, that sort of is beyond your ego. When your ego is in the driver's seat, you can't feel that. It's too busy it's defending you. It's
right,
which is a healthy thing to do, because we need an ego.
Yeah.
I'm not against them. I'm not against egos. But they create and defend our sense of self. So they're really concerned with making sure that we never feel vulnerable at all, because to an ego, vulnerability is a threat to the self. You could get laughed at. So it could be a threat. You could lose your social status. You could get rejected. You could... someone could have power over you and use it in a bad way. Don't be vulnerable ever, says an ego. That's its job. It's so right. It creates and protects your self-identity, your self-worth, and your social status. It's very concerned.
I can't remember what movie it was in. Things can get weird. Like when people, you know, go off and have sex and they came back, they go, yeah, it just got weird. It's like, well, I guess that's the ego driving the bus then.
Well, sexual fantasies are stories sent to you by your desire. Let's just imagine that we've got different organs in the psyche, just like we do in our body. Like we've got lungs that do the lungs job and the heart that does the heart's job. And yet it all makes a body. We need all of them. So let's just imagine the ego is just one organ of the psyche. And we've got another one that's another organ of the psyche that sends desires. And it's got its own genius and its own blind spots, just like the ego does.
Right.
And it's sending these sexual fantasy messages or these particular sexual desire messages as little love letters to your ego. It's saying, oh, that's what you fear about vulnerability, is that you fear that you're going to be harmed if you're vulnerable. Well, I'm going to include your fear in this sexual fantasy story that I tell you, and I'm going to resolve it for you.
Oh, It's brilliant.
Right?
Oh my goodness.
When I worked that out, I was like, what?
It's so smart.
That's but how many people actually stories? Follow
through with it? Like,
well, they don't know they how just to
carry it around.
Well, they just take it as literal instruction. They think if they're having a fantasy about a threesome, they have to have a threesome. That's not the point. The point is what I learned to do when I got more sophisticated. I set up a play space in Sydney, a venue that had different themed rooms. You can see some of the leftover furniture behind me from that from those days.
Gorgeous. Thank you. By the way.
I had really lush space of for sensual rooms. I had a dungeon for BDSM play, and I had an erotic massage room. I had all of these different themed rooms for people to explore, a cross-dressing room with lots of pink. All sorts of things were there, right? Because I trusted people's fantasies. But I got really much more sophisticated in sitting people down on my red velvet couch, sharing a cup of tea, having a chat for half an hour. And I'd ask them all about their past peak experiences and their sexual fantasies. And instead of trying to look at sexual fantasies as, unfinished business from our childhood or, something that's wrong with us, I trusted it and I listened to the story narrative underneath. How are our fears about our social status, our self-worth and our self-identity included in the story, and how are they resolved? So because each time I followed that, an alchemical reaction would happen. I was like for example, let's take a fantasy of somebody who is really enjoying being used by the whole football team. Okay. Not something you necessarily want to live in real life, but could be super hot for you. You might want to live it in real life. But if you did, what I learned really quickly is when people did try and live it out literally, it didn't feel like they thought it would. They could even have a great time, but it didn't feel like they thought it would. It didn't take them to where this story was could potentially take them.
Right.
If instead I looked at that story and I went, okay, what does being used give you? What does it solve for you? What's in there? What's being used do for you? And it does a lot of things, but for the purposes of this conversation, I'll keep it simple.
Okay. I'm starting to start a list.
Imagine, right, your vulnerability, your fear of vulnerability. Am I desirable enough?
Hmm.
Am I desirable enough? Do they really want me? I've got wobbly bits. I've got jiggly bits all over the place. I just want to lie back here. I don't want to be focused on giving them anything. I just want to surrender into the experience. But that's selfish. I can't do that. My identity as a good girl is I've got to care for them. I can't just lie here and just receive and surrender into the feelings. What if my desire is so hungry that I lose my social status? They'll call me a whore. Like I can't be the one that desires. All right then, says this organ of the psyche desire, I shall include all of that and I shall resolve it for you. Okay, let's see. Are you worried that you're not desirable enough? They're using you. They're selfish bastards. They wouldn't use you if they didn't find you desirable. You're hot. Right. Oh, you worried your desire's too big? Oh, well, we're being the whole football team.
Oh, my God.
You're going to get that met. And you're worried you're going to take up too much space and too much time and be selfish with your own needs? Well, no, you've got to be there till, this need is going to be met. Like, they're just going to keep coming and coming and coming. You are not too much.
There's a lot of dudes on a football team.
Right. And also, do you have to focus on meeting their needs if they're being selfish and they're using you? Do you have to caretake their needs at all?
No.
No, you can just relax and surrender into the sensations. And because it's a fantasy, even though they're being selfish bastards who are using you, guess what? They actually magically touch you exactly the way you want to be touched for as long as you want to be touched.
Right.
So the end result is the exact opposite of what would happen if you were genuinely being used.
Right.
So it's the poison plus the antidote. equals the alchemical reaction, and you end up free to just completely open, and your ego stands down. And when your ego stands down, that's when you notice the wonderful bliss beyond. It's like, whoa, I did not know that being used by the whole football team and talking smutty, dirty, selfish stuff would actually have a spiritual experience attached to it.
Right.
But it does.
I mean, I feel like there must have been a greater purpose than we realized than just, procreation. You know, just there's not, if it was just meant for having babies, there wouldn't be so much involved in layers and different ways of pleasure, right? So that is like, my mind is blowing because it's like, wow, that's brilliant. I think you need to like take this on a lecture tour.
Right, Neil, I'll do that.
We need to teach this to people before they get shut down and that they don't get to have that experience of they just live their life thinking that all of their fantasies were something evil that the devil sent them.
Right. Desire itself is synonymous with the devil in Western thought.
Right.
Like the little devil on your shoulder is desire. But actually desire was the genius that was on your side all along that was trying to solve your problem so that you could actually open to your full self, move from closed off I to a connection with your whole self to we, merging with somebody else, you know. Esther Perel's The Urge to Merge with Somebody Else. And then even beyond that, this urge to merge with life itself. So actually desire is a genius, but it is one organ of the psyche. Just like the ego, it has its blind spots. It does not know the outside world exists. So when desire tells you to spend all of your money on, tax money on hats, don't listen to it. It does not know what to do in the outside world.
Are you looking at your hat collection?
Yes, I was looking at my hat collection.
I can show you my scarf collection. Oh. Yes, it doesn't know those things.
No, it doesn't.
And maybe, I mean, think about like your. I think about fantasies. So if you do run towards it like you did and decide to carry out some of it and it doesn't turn out the way you want, your desire didn't plan for that and your ego said, desire, you lied to me. Like, does that cause a dysfunction? Does that cause like it to close further? Are you afraid to try again?
Spirals into a mistrusting relationship with desire itself.
Right.
So this is why actually we need a skill set to be able to navigate this. It's not something that is available to us because of the way that, you know, millennia of training in our culture and in our DNA has not taught us to navigate this.
Right.
But when you do have some skills around it, you absolutely can get the best of both worlds. And the very first thing that I teach people is the desire compass. How are we going to rewire our own relationship to desire itself? How are we going to form an embodied relationship using somatic skills? So somatic is not just talking about things, but actually feeling your own body wisdom, your own body signals, and trusting them and having an active relationship with your own. Even your butterflies are telling you something, like when your throat constricts or opens, it's telling you something. So learning how to listen to these various different organs of the psyche, but specifically, how do you form a consensual two-way relationship with desire where it becomes your ally? You're no longer fighting each other. You build trust. And I guide people to have little dates with their own desire so that they can do things and get to know it and notice that actually it really does cooperate with you once you know how to hear it and talk two ways. It actually wants to help. That's its whole job. So that's a radical thing in and of itself.
Right.
Then the second step, the second pillar of my training is how do you navigate your own sexual fantasies? How do you work out the maps? The first one's the desire compass. Now we've got a map. Let's look at the narrative in here. how is your particular fantasies, even if you're not conscious of having them, you do have them. You just think that they're not fantasies, but they really are.
Okay, I trust you. You're the expert. I'm sure everybody does, even the ones who try to say they don't.
Well, they might not be aware of it. Sometimes they think that's just how sex is, but no, actually they've projected their fantasy onto it. But anyway.
Okay.
But we need to work out what is the way in which desire sent its little love message to ego and included the fears and resolved them for them. This is the part where it was so essential for me to trust their clients. And when you know that, then how do you actually create a real life experience that's not necessarily, you know, trying to live out the fantasy literally, because desire doesn't know about the outside world. Desire doesn't even know about gravity. You don't trust it for instructions in the outside world. But you do trust it for its psychological genius, right? So another part of you has to come in and go, okay, how can we create the same effect in our real life play? So this is the journey of play, bringing it out of our heads and into our beds in ways that respect ourselves, each and our sexual partners, and honors both our spiritual and our primal selves. Right? How are we gonna do that?
That's like a super tall order.
Oh, it's doable. It's absolutely doable. I got it down to a fine art in the divinery. The divinery is the name of that play space in Sydney. My client named it.
They said, I had to come and visit you.
I'm no longer a sex worker, by the way. I'm retired. I'm now teaching this. I now teach this to some of the world's leading sex experts, which feels really good. And I do teach other sex workers and professional dominatrices, but I also teach people who really just want to explore themselves, deep self-discovery through the lens of the erotic. They want to claim this back as a force that's for them, not taken from them.
Right.
But it is a six-month training program, and it's called the Divinery Method, because that was the method that I used in the Divinery.
Right. And I guess it doesn't matter age either, right? It's, I mean, age of consent, but because I know I'm 57 and I'm 57. I'm like, wait, how old am I? And I know my brain thinks it's 18.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So I guess it doesn't matter how old your physical age is. Your desire doesn't know what age is, does it?
I've had several coaching clients in their 80s and they are rocking it.
Right?
So you can learn this art form. It's never too late.
It's never too late, my friends. And so the freebie that you have on your website, what is it?
So if you want to begin, you're really curious now. You go, wow, why do my turn-ons? How do my turn-ons work? How do I find out what my particular wiring is?
Right.
I've got a gift for you. I'm going to walk you through a little exercise where you Google celebrities that you find attractive. It's a non-explicit exercise. You don't actually have to confess your sexual fantasies to anybody at this beginning stage. So, you know, I know people get really worried about that. You just need to Google some images of somebody that you find attractive. Then look at them when their body type is about the same, when they're about the same age that you find them attractive in. So it's the same person physically. Then line up a few different pictures and go, why do I find that one more attractive than that one? Even though it's exactly the same person. And I walk you through an exercise where you can notice subtle things about body language, power dynamics, ways in which you're reacting and how you can start to notice the story that you're projecting on that face expression compared to that one. And you become aware, oh, that's why I'm drawn to that one more than that one. Yeah. Oh. And once you start to become aware of that, you can start experimenting with little steps of just taking on that body language and face expression, or asking your partner to, and having a giggle while you try it all on and make a fool of yourself, and then do it again anyway and get hot.
Right.
So I'll walk you through what to look for, the questions to ask, how can this be helpful? So you can get that at myfantasyis.com. If you're interested in working with me, you can look at artemisiadivine.com. But the freebie will get you on my mailing list, and then you'll find out all about the spirituality of smut and my tips that I give people all the time about how to engage things.
That's coming out.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm. Super exciting.
Yeah.
When is it coming out?
Well, that depends on the editing process and how many times I have to rewrite things. But
I know.
But hopefully this year. So like it's aiming for, this year. So
stay tuned. And does it come in a plain brown wrapper?
Oh, I haven't thought that far ahead.
That would be funny. I'm just thinking of when Playboys used to show up. They probably still show up in like the black wrapper so you couldn't see what it was, but everybody knew what it was. Like, come on. So funny. So all of those links are going to be in the show notes. Nobody has to worry. If you're driving, if you're thinking about something else, don't worry. It's in the show notes for you to click through and go and get that. And I totally recommend it. I mean, come on. We were put on the planet for pleasure and happiness and joy and fun. And if part of your life is closed because you think it's not appropriate, then how sad is that?
Well, this is the way to make it appropriate, because we're afraid that it's going to cause harm to ourselves or somebody else. That's what we really fear, right? When we say something's inappropriate. Yeah. This is how to engage it in a way that's going to benefit everybody involved. And right. That's going to change. I feel as though this is a piece that's going to really help reduce all of the misdirected actions that are based on misunderstanding of desire.
Right. I look forward to that spreading, that this movement spreading. I am glad to be a part of it. Before I say goodbye and let you finish your coffee, do you have a final word of wisdom or two or three?
I just want to say it again, because it's so important to really understand this. Sexual desire is a organ of the psyche with its own genius, and it is what it does is it knows exactly how to change your internal state and help you access these vulnerable states of expanded wonderfulness. It knows how to take you home to your whole self and share that with somebody else. It does not know how to behave in the outside world.
Right.
So let's learn how to, let's not miss out, let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. Let's actually actively form a relationship with this really wise part of ourselves. And if you want to start right now, actually just give your desire a little bit of gratitude. Like actually actively feel gratitude for it and say, hey, I haven't trusted you all of this time. Sorry, I didn't understand what you were trying to say. I fought against you. I struggled against you, or I suppressed you, or I gave in to you and then yelled at you for the consequence hangover that I'm now having to deal with. I didn't get it, but now I'm actually going to send you gratitude, and I'm committing to making a relationship with you. I'm going to hear what your language is. I'm going to give you much more respect.
That's brilliant. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your wisdom. I'm sure that we could go on and on, because I know that you know so much, but we must respect the time. So thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking to you. Friends in podcast land, yeah, definitely share it with people. Come on, send it out into the world. Check out the freebie. No one's tracking you. Don't worry. Just go on one of those incognito tabs if you don't want Google to know what you're doing. And I will see you next time. Take care, my friends.